first thing I remember knowing was a lonesome whistle blowing.
Welcome back to the Jeff Moore Show from Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Friday morning. What's left of this Friday morning? Coming up Monday, as we do every Monday, State Representative Shane Stringer, every other Monday, I should say. And we'll have him and Dale Jackson and perhaps a guest to be named later will be on the guest roster. So tune in on Monday after your Easter holiday. Join us now. It is that time of the week. We do this every Friday about this time. I'm very pleased to bring on our returning champion, State Senator Chris Elliott. Senator, good morning. How are you?
I am doing great. Great to be back home in South Alabama and out of Montgomery after a really, really busy week.
Hell of a week, I would say. But it's not that bills are getting passed, but a lot of stuff is being introduced. And then there's kind of the obligatory responsibilities and duties of the Alabama legislature underway, which maybe people don't see, but it keeps your mornings tied up. It's not just this business you see on the floor necessarily.
You're absolutely right. And it's one of those things that I talk about. You know, we've got three new freshman House members from Baldwin County, and I talked to, I think, all of them yesterday, and just their impressions of the session so far. And that was one of the things we talked about, was just how interesting it is to see how much work, almost 90% of the work that goes on off the floor, you know, back in an office or a side conference room, or even, you know, this morning sitting at my dining room table, still working on legislation, still trying to make sure that the wording is right and that you've got it how you need it to be prior to, you know, prior to being introduced or being amended or even ever being on the floor. And it's one of the reasons that when you see things that get on the floor, they're either completely non-controversial, which is, you know, those are the easy ones, right? Or they've had a ton of work put in them ahead of time to really get them where they need to be. And so you see these unanimous votes or these close to unanimous votes or even the party line votes, without a whole lot of dissent.
Well, yeah. And then, a lot of this has been ironed out already somewhere else, but, I guess the one that caused the most intrigue, at least as far as you're concerned, what you want to do with this, with these occupational boards, governance boards and licensing and whatnot. Now, we talked about this in the past a few times, but I don't think a lot of us, when we look at it, oh, that's a good thing. We're going to streamline the process and we're going to create a better system, a more efficient system. Yeah, we should all be for efficiency in government. And as it turns out, there are people that are very heavily invested in the status quo.
Heavily invested is a great way to put that. There are people whose livelihoods depend on the status quo. There are people who are profiting off of the inefficiencies of the current system, and they don't want to reform that. They don't want government to be more efficient. They don't want government to be more responsive. They don't want government to be more transparent, because they are either profiting personally from it, or again, they're an employee of a small board whose livelihood depends on this, you know, staying just like it is. And listen, their position is understandable. I mean, if that's where their livelihood's coming from and that's where they're making their money, then, you know, or if they're making a whole lot of money in the case of some of these private folks, then of course they're going to fight that. And what I would challenge my colleagues to do as we look at this legislation is to say, yeah, and while you may want to listen to these folks, and I understand that, you need to think about it from your constituent standpoint, from the 23% of Alabamians who are licensed by one of these occupational boards, as to whether or not this is the most efficient way to do it. And so, and the best, you know, value for their small business dollar, and that's who most of these are, small business people. You know, should we modernize the way we're doing things? Should we eke out every last little bit of efficiency that we could get, and should we make sure we remove the barriers to entry into the workforce, especially from a small business standpoint, that we can? you know, Jeff, you and I talk about all the time, and you've always asked me this question: why is our workforce participation rate so low? Why is it? And I told you time and time again, I don't know, but I keep looking. And I find a little bit over here and a little bit over here and a little bit, you know, is it too many federal handouts? Is it too much free, you know, PPU? What are the issues? This is one of them. This is it. That we have barriers to entry, that we have boards that say we don't want any more competition in this marketplace. We want to keep it as small as it can. And it's my intention to turn a few tables over and see if we can change the paradigm. We can change the way we're doing things and make things more efficient for the people of the state of Alabama.
Well, the thing about these licensing boards, I mean, are they even necessary for some of the things that they do? It just seems like a barrier to employment just for the sake of, government needs to get a few nickels and dimes here or whatever, and you look at it, it's like it just seems ridiculous. Now, I understand you've got to have some occupations that require some kind of licensing to make sure those are qualified individuals who are performing these tasks and no one gets hurt. There's a public safety element to it and whatnot, but some of it just seems it exists just for the sake of existing, for the sake of having a self-perpetuating government bureaucracy.
I don't disagree with you at all there. So, but I do want to clarify, the legislation that I have filed does not address whether this board needs to be here or not. I've left that alone for now. What we have instead done is saying we don't need all this bureaucracy for these boards. We don't need these separate bureaucracies. We don't need a separate executive director and a separate secretary or administrative assistant and a separate general counsel and a separate conference room and a separate coffee pot for each one of these 150 some odd different boards. Let's consolidate all of that. Your board can meet, and again, we haven't changed the board. Your board can meet at 9 o'clock on Monday morning, and the next board can meet at 11 o'clock on Monday morning, and then the next board can meet at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and they can all use the same coffee pot in the same conference room and the same, and the efficiencies will be there. Now, do I think we need to look at whether or not we really need to be licensing wrestling or some of these other things? Then, yeah, I think there's a reasonable argument to be made there. But I think if we can get the governmental efficiency going first, we'll be in a good spot.
But isn't there a lot of overlap? I mean, couldn't you have like one of these licensing boards do licensing for like a number of these entities? You see what I'm saying? Like, I know it gets complicated. I know this is not necessarily what you're looking at here. Not that you want to necessarily eliminate something, but you can just say the same board can do this too.
Oh, absolutely. There's no question about it. So you have to ask yourself, you know, and I think we'll get there at some point. Why do we have a plumbing board and an on-site wastewater disposal board? That's septic tanks and plumbing. Could those go together? Why do we need to have two of them? Why do we have electricians and plumbers and HVAC folks all with different boards? Can't we just have a couple board members who are HVAC experts, a couple members who are plumbing experts, and maybe a couple members who are electrical experts, and just have one board that kind of oversees it all? And is that a reasonable way to do it? So there are, I think, in the future, room for conversation, or is kind of room for conversation in the future about some efficiency as it comes, you know, as it pertains to that. But right now, I think the first step is, Let's just get some efficiency in the bureaucracy itself, so we don't have all of these little separate fiefdoms, all of whom have to increase license fees to pay for these little fiefdoms, right? All the general counselors, the admins, the executive directors, and the furniture and the office and the rent and all these things. Can we just consolidate all of that so we make sure the license fee isn't any more than it needs to be? And then we need to have a serious question about whether or not we continue to have all of these different occupational licensing boards and whether or not that's necessary.
Joined by State Senator Chris Elliott here on the program. A few other things you guys are looking at. Well, what's your initial reaction to the Orr Garrett grocery tax idea?
I have some concerns about WIC versus SNAP when it comes to eligible items. I think we need to look at a broader definition than just WIC. I do, and I've said before, really like the fiscally conservative and responsible way that Senator Orr is proceeding with this. Let's cut grocery tax, but let's do it in a way that if we run into a problem with the budgets from a revenue standpoint, if we enter into a recession, that there is a way to automatically pause so that we don't end up taking Alabama back to a spot where we've got proration or we cause our own significant budget problems. And I think that's, a reasonable and fiscally prudent way to do that, while at the same time acknowledging that that's not the case right now, that we have significant surpluses in both budgets and that we need to respond accordingly. But I do think that the definition of eligible items, and just for your listeners, there are very limited number of items that are covered under WIC exemptions and then the Supplemental Nutrition Program, SNAP, that has a wider range of most food items. And I don't want to end up in a situation where we go back to the people of the state of Alabama and say, we've cut your grocery taxes, but we've done it on such a small subset of items that most ordinary people don't feel it. That's not going to be a good look for the Alabama legislature. That's not what my constituents want. And I don't think that's necessarily the way to go. We need to look at SNAP. And if we have the guardrails that Senator Orr has proposed, then I think that they will keep us from getting in any kind of financial trouble. But go ahead and widen the eligible items to make sure that the people of Alabama can truly benefit from it.
Well, I tell you what it looks like to me, and I could be totally wrong here, but the Orr approach, the Garrett approach, is this is what they think can pass, perhaps, that there's some people that don't want to do any of this, right? I assume some of your colleagues think the cut in the grocery tax is insane, and this is kind of maybe a happy sort of medium.
I understand that there's some that want to just keep the money. I understand there's some like the governor who kind of want to give everybody a pat on the head and do a rebate and say, here's your money back. We're not changing anything, substantive other than simply giving you a rebate. I think that's a missed opportunity. I really do. And I think that if we have the conversation again about the guardrails that are proposed, If the guardrails are there, what difference does it make what the eligible items are? If we hit the guardrails, then that ought to govern. And I think that it's going to be a dangerous spot for members to go back and say we've cut grocery tax, even if it is a compromise, where people don't really feel it. Or people look at this and say, hold on, my bread was still taxed because it wasn't whole wheat. Or my pasta was still taxed because it wasn't whole wheat, or the gallon of milk that I bought wasn't the cheapest version of the gallon of milk available,
right,
and therefore it's still taxed. And those are the differences between SNAP and WIC, and I think that's going to be a problem in selling it, no matter how good a job you try to do selling it.
Last question, we'll wind it down on this, Senator. You sent them to me, but I've seen some of your colleagues, and I saw the John Wall respond. This proposed rule change, Title IX, and with K-12 even, it's not just collegiate athletics. A lot of concern there from a lot of state policymakers how this could impact our state level education and local education systems.
Jeff, this is one of the things that makes me just shake my head and really disappointed in the way that our country is going right now. I read that press release from the Department of Education, said the Federal Department of Education, and was just sad for our country to be talking about, elementary school children, and you bring that up correctly. This is a K-12 thing as well, but we shouldn't teach little boys and little girls to play on little boys and little girls, soccer teams or softball teams or baseball teams or whatever, and that they should be able to play with whatever gender they identify with, and that the excuse for doing that was because they really haven't in elementary school hit puberty yet, and therefore don't necessarily have the body changes that take place that would that would preclude that, you know, that would make them have any of the differences that would cause problems in sports. And I thought, gosh, here we are again, sexualizing elementary school children in a public policy discussion for the benefit of these folks, the trans community later on in life. And it just drives me nuts that our elementary school children even understand or are being subjected to this conversation. I think it is so wrong and so disappointing. You know, let kids just be kids. Tell them, yes, you're a boy and you're a girl. And darn it, it's okay to say that. I hope we can get away from this. And I hope that people that vote for Democrats understand that this is the agenda that is being pushed by national Democrats. And, you know, you really need to think hard about that. If you're going to continue to support them.
Well, it's if we pass something in the legislature that's contrary to this, I mean, what do? It seems like that's a possibility. I know the supremacy clause, and I understand that, but this is kind of like the vaccine exemption in some way, where it's a regulation or a rule, not a congressionally passed law, and you got to start. Maybe start looking for loopholes or something, sort of like you did there. But I already see there's a bill filed in the House that would ban this on the collegiate level. You see the possibility here where state versus federal butt heads again.
Well, and I think that's absolutely going to happen. And I think that that Alabamians and the Alabama legislature, they know who we are, they know who we represent, and they know, you know, we know what we stand for. And it isn't this mess. The problem is we are hooked on federal money, and every other state is too. And if we are going to take a stand and say enough is enough, this is a bridge too far, this is not something we're going to do, I don't care if you give me the money for it or not, then I think we need to be willing and ready to have that conversation. And I'm for one, am of the opinion that we need to say, never mind. This is too much, and it is too high a cost for our kids. And if this is what you require, if this is what you require in order for us to receive federal education dollars, then keep it. We'll figure out a different way. But this is a bridge too far for me.
I think you're not saying that alone. Senator, we got to leave it there. Have a happy Easter if I don't talk to you before then, and we will reconvene next week.
To you and yours, thanks for having me on.
Thank you. State Senator Chris Elliott there on the line. We got to get a break in here. We'll be right back. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
And they made the bugles ring. We stood beside our cotton fields and didn't say a thing. We fired our guns and the British kept a coming. There wasn't as many as there was a while ago. We fired once more and they began to run on down the Mississippi to the Gulf of Mexico.